This podcast is part of the Christian Geek Central Network at ChristianGeekCentral.com.
Strangers and Aliens, Episode 86, The Seven Deadly Sins, Greed.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend's plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God?
The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Welcome to Strangers and Aliens. My name is Steve MacDonald, and I have two co-hosts with me today. The first is...
Ben Avery. And I am joined by, sitting over there...
Dr. Jace O'Neill.
And we're the Strangers and Aliens.
Yes, we are.
So, how you doing, guys?
Pretty good.
Doing great. Yeah. How are you doing?
I feel really energized right now, and I'm not quite sure why.
I think it was that steak you ate.
Oh, my goodness. I made the best steak I've ever made in my life today, and it's because I got the recipe wrong.
Awesome.
I kept doing things wrong, but I read three different recipes online. I'm like, oh, wait, I did this wrong, but that's kind of like the other recipe. I think I'll just kind of adjust course. And my wife loved it. I loved it. It was good.
You know, you wrote us that email that you were making steaks for your wife, and I'll tell you, I almost replied saying, this is the only time you'll ever hear this, but I kind of wish I was your wife tonight because I really want steak. I'm really hungry for steak right now.
Would you say you just really want it? You just really, really want to have it.
You know, my wife is actually the bigger steak eater. She loves steak and you know, steak and potatoes and that kind of stuff. But, you know, there comes a time when you just get a hankering for a steak. And when you said that, my stomach started talking.
Yeah. Every once in a while, we'll let the kids eat without us. And then we'll put them to bed. And while my wife is putting them to bed, I'll make a steak dinner for us. Or sometimes I'll do like fish or something else. But it's generally something that, you know, this would have been done on the grill, but it's hot and I didn't feel like going outside. So I did this on the skillet on our stove and it turned out good.
Awesome.
But yeah. So enough about Avery date nights, which when you have five children, that's what that was. That was considered the date night.
That's date night. So. Wow.
Yeah.
And of course, it top it all off with the podcast.
Yeah, you know, that's the way I end a date night. I'm like, okay, well, you go watch TV, honey. I'm going to go talk with those two yahoos, and we're going to talk about greed and sci-fi.
As well so, we should.
Yeah, my wife knew we were planning on doing this when she suggested. I think she just really wanted some steak, like you were saying, Dr. Jace.
Yeah.
So... But yeah, we are in the middle of our Seven Deadly Sins series. And guys, can I throw some math at you real quick?
I like math.
For the first three episodes, between episode one and episode two of the Seven Deadly Sins, guess how many episodes were between them? It's 12.
Oh, wow.
Like 12 probably, episodes in between them.
I would probably have to say...
Between episode two and three, there were 12 episodes.
Do we have to act like we don't already know this?
And did I send this into an email with you guys?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
you did. Yeah, because between the last one like we did and this one, it's been like 30. So, yeah, we're...
like 3-0?
We're way behind. I had hoped that we were going to do the wrap-up episode in October.
13?
You know, in time for Halloween, you know, spooky,
you know,
evil,
we should have saved this topic for Christmas, you know, greed and charity.
Yeah, yeah, or for Halloween actually, with the whole greed of give me something good to eat.
Saved gluttony for that one. No, we already did that.
That's
one.
True. That's true.
I got a rock.
I got a rock. Yeah. So we're talking about greed this time, though. And as we always do with the seven deadly sins, we are going to talk about the sin, define the sin, and define its opposite. Talk about examples from science fiction and fantasy of the sin and its opposite. Talk about some of the scriptural teachings in the Bible that you would find about the sin and its opposite. And then we'll talk about some personal applications about the sin and its opposite. And at some point in there, I'm going to open the book of Lewis.
The book of Lewis. Yes. I remember that.
Yeah, that insanely long sound effect. So you guys ready to talk about some greed?
Yeah, let's talk about some greed.
Let's talk greed. So, Dr. Jace, when we first brought this up, when we were talking about what we're going to be talking about in the upcoming episodes, you wanted to make sure that we kind of made a distinction between greed and another of the seven deadly sins that's similar. Can you want to go ahead and do that right now? Kind of introduce the listening audience to the idea that you were
to the sin versus what that you mean,
the similar one that's similar but different.
Oh yeah,
I believe it's envy. Is that what?
Yeah,
yeah.
Greed is basically a sin of excess. You know, you want, and it's similar to some of the other sins like lust and gluttony. They're sins of excess, but some people get greed and envy mixed up. But envy is actually, now it's somewhat similar to jealousy, but the difference is that envy actually desires entity and covets it. Jealousy, you kind of get jealous of a person or jealous of what someone else has. Envy, you actually get envious and desire the item and covet it.
Would you say that envy is the desire, being desirous of something, and maybe almost the root behind when you get to greed, because greed becomes more about the desire to accumulate and to have the excess and to have the thing.
I think, greed is, I mean, it depends how you parse them, but greed is this natural desire of stuff, where envy, you actually, not just that you want it, but you actually dislike anybody else having it too. And okay. You want what other people have. How you would explain it would be, for instance, for gluttony, or I mean, I'm sorry, for greed, the opposite would be charity, whereas the opposite, when we'll talk about this more when we do envy, but the opposite of envy would be kindness. So we can talk more about that as we get into envy, but that's kind of gives you a little bit of a contrast where greed's opposite is charity. Greed is about me, me, me. The opposite is charity. It's all about everyone else.
Okay. I found a quote from Dante about envy saying, it's the love of one's own good perverted to a desire to deprive other men of their good. Would it be fair to say greed is kind of a self-centered inward thing and envy is a reaching out thing?
Well,
as far as your feelings anyway.
Yeah. I mean, they both can be – well, I would say that they both could be inward and outward. It's just that greed in itself doesn't necessarily – focus in on the other people who have it. They're just hungry for having it themselves. Whereas envy, you actually want what other people want and you want the item. So it's about the people and the item, or greed. Like for instance, Ben, if you were greed and you wanted just to be rich and fame, or you just wanted to be rich and have all this excess of everything and money, money, money. And you just, everything you did was driven by having more. You're not even worried about what anybody else did. You just want more, more, more. Well, envy, say if Steve saw what you had, he would become envious of what you had and envious of the stuff and begin to covet. So it's not just him outward focused. It's still outward focused. It's just more focused that you have it and he doesn't.
And so for our purposes right now, then, we're talking about greed.
Yeah.
And we are going to talk about then its opposite is charity. And I think that's probably a pretty easy opposite to draw. Would you say that if greed is all about wanting stuff, charity becomes giving up stuff, right?
Yeah.
To other people, not just giving it up. You're not just throwing it away, but you're helping other people by giving it up.
Yeah, greed is like a bottomless hole that you're trying to fill. Well, charity is, you know, in some forms a little bit of simplicity that you're giving out. Not that you can't have stuff, but that you are not focused on getting, but giving.
All right, excellent. So now we will, I think we should move on to some examples that kind of give us a good picture of greed from science fiction and fantasy. And I have a list here that I'm pretty sure most of what's on my list, well, maybe not most of it, but a lot of what's on my list is actually going to be on your lists as well. So I'm going to let you guys go ahead and name a couple to get them out of the way so you can get them if you want them. Because I know sometimes we fight over the lists. Like,
well, why don't we go each give our number one, and then we or number five or whatever, and then we can at least get one in, and then we'll go from there.
All right.
So I'll go with one of mine, which is when I look at greed, I think there's very few really better examples in sci-fi than Quark from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
I mean, was he on your list?
Well, he wasn't. I wrote Ferengi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in general. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. So I had Quark because he was all about, I mean, the whole society is built on wealth. I mean, the religion is built on wealth. And so, you know, you see him in his bar and casino on Deep Space Nine, and it's all about accumulation. And he does a lot of, illegal things to do that. Now, he does some good things. In fact, as the series goes on, you start to see a little bit different side of Quark, but there's still a desire for greed in there.
Yeah, and with the long form television show where it's gone 7 seasons, right, I hope you see some change in growth. But he definitely, you see it more in his brother. You see it more in Rom, where he turns his back on the Ferengi way and, you know, actually gives money to help people sometimes. So there's an example of charity, you know, and Quark is just, why would you even think about doing that? Why would you break the sacred, you know, and pulls out Bible verses about, you know, take what you need and then take some more, you know,
the 49th rule
of acquisition, the rules of acquisition, which when Deep Space Nine had come out, I was not quite into Star Trek enough to get those books. If Deep Space Nine had come out 3 years earlier, Rules of Acquisition would have been on my shelf. I guarantee it. But yeah. Nice. So yeah, I put the Ferengi in general, not Quark specifically, but Quark is obviously the best example because 7 seasons.
Well, and also you get to, that's where you really, because when you actually get to see the depth of Ferengis, because when at first when you see the Ferengis on Next Generation, they're just kind of creepy, and you know that they're all about business, but you don't know the details of it. In Quark, you really get to see the deep rooted sense of greed.
Yeah, I remember actually they were talking about Ferengi in Encounter at Farpoint, the pilot episode of Next Generation. They just mentioned it or mentioned them, and it was like this terrifying thing. I think that if I remember correctly, they used it as a threat. You know, well, we'll let the Ferengi come on in or something like that. And they're like, no, no, no. And then we meet them in that first episode and they have those whips. Those were pretty cool. Those were cool. But they were not at all what they were like by the time we got to Deep Space Nine and Quark. And they have – I love their houses too, by the way. Yeah. When they go to the Ferengi homeworld and it's like a hobbit hole. Yeah. Circle doors, short, you know, small and – But yeah, definitely okay, Ferengi. So, Steve,
I am going to this is deep into our list, so this would be like my number 5. I would go to more of a like a fairy tale type of a thing and go with King Midas.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah, that's very good.
With the golden touch, you know.
Oh, that really bothered me when I was a kid.
I know.
Oh, man.
Well, it's frightening. I mean,
it's terribly frightening, yes.
It's good because it does what it needs to do. You know, it scares you into thinking that, wow, maybe greed isn't good. And, you know, just you're sort of getting the story told to you as if, and you sort of put yourself in Midas' role, because there's very few other characters in the story. You know, so when Midas, you know, touches himself and turns to gold, you know, you get that sense of, you know, it's almost like it's happening to you. And what would that be? What would that feel like? I mean, that's it. You're gold forever. You know, are you aware? Did you just die? I mean, there's just so many different things to ponder, and to see that as the, you know, the outcome of greed, just, you know, a frightening tale.
Well, and you have this idea, you know, my shop teacher always used to say, you came into this world bare bottom, that's the way you leave. And in that variation of the King Midas story, you have this idea of, yeah, he is going to be with gold forever. He's never going to lose the gold, but what does it gain him?
Yeah.
Yeah, because in the whole scheme of things, gold is a metal. I mean, we just happen to value it, but it's what is it? I mean, what is more important than a person, than a family or people you care about?
Well, yeah. And that's the point of the story that's most terrifying to me is, I mean, well, first, what's terrifying is there's one time I remember vividly someone telling the story or something. I can't remember what the situation was, but he tried to take a drink. And the water hardened in his mouth, and as it went down his throat, and he like had to gag it up.
Yeah,
you know. But then the other thing being when he touched his daughter.
Yeah, that was the one that got me.
That's what got me is, first of all, at one point, you know, what if my dad did that accidentally to me? You know, turned me into gold.
Thanks a lot, Dad.
But yeah, like you were saying, Dr. Jace. I mean, this is, you know, he trades in gold for his daughter.
Well, and I think to me, keeping it kind of sci-fi fantasy, I always relate those two with Rogue, you know, because she can't touch him for different reasons, of course, but she's super powerful. But at the same time, it basically isolates her.
Yeah. And if you really want to take King Midas to its fullest extreme, you know, he could put on a glove so he doesn't touch anything. But what happens to the glove?
It turns to gold.
All the clothes that he's wearing, what happens to the clothes? I mean, it is just it's a great metaphor. A great metaphor of greed.
Yeah.
Yeah, good one, Steve. I had not even considered that.
That's a really good one.
So, okay, my number one. I'm not going deep into my list. I'm going to just throw this out there right now because I want to be the one who says it. Me. I want to be the one who does this one.
Are you listing yourself?
Yeah.
Ben Avery.
I'm talking about me. Three. Whenever we do lists on Strangers and Aliens.
Oh, wait, that would be Pride. Never mind.
No, it's the One Ring.
Yeah.
And Sauron. And how just people desire it. And I'm watching Lord of the Rings, the movies, with my son right now. He's read through the books, so he gets to watch the movies. In fact, tomorrow we're going to watch the second half of Two Towers. we're doing it as a television series,
and
we're breaking up every movie into three or four parts, I should say.
Wow.
We started a tradition of watching it on Thanksgiving or New Year's. We'll usually pick one a year so we can rotate them around.
Extended editions, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
We do the cartoon versions from the '70s.
I've done those with my kids. Actually, just of The Hobbit.
I can see it now. Your kids are in their 30s and they're talking about their childhood and connecting with other people. And they're like, man, remember, they don't make good cartoons like they used to. I know. I grew up with Phineas and Ferb. What's that? I grew up with Lord of the Rings, and that was made in the 70s. Yeah. Wait a minute.
Or they're 30 years old and they're like, hey, man, remember when we were kids and watched The Hobbit? Yeah, those three movies were awesome. Three? What? Hey, guys, sing along with me. The greatest adventure
is all yours.
Okay.
So I actually,
back to the One Ring, though.
I actually have one that's in that same world, but it's actually a different take. And that would be what I would say would be greed would be the dwarves.
Yeah, you're right.
Because that, just like a little bit like the Ferengi, it's all about wealth and accumulation and stuff.
Well, the climax of The Hobbit is about greed as well, because you have the dwarves holed up in their city, in the mountain, and you have the armies coming and wanting their fair share. The humans want their fair share. And you have the whole idea of then the Arkenstone as well, which is, you know, causes people to desire it and everything like that. But yeah, the dwarves, that's true. But with the One Ring, I'm looking at specifically the people who touch it, you know, become consumed by the desire to have it. They want to have it. And maybe that is more envy there on Gollum's part and even on Bilbo's part.
I think the One Ring actually encompasses almost all of the sins to some degree.
That's a possibility.
At least, I mean, obviously it's a story, it's a kid's story, so you don't go into, you know, lust or gluttony, so to speak. But if you think about it, wrath and all these other ones, it really encompasses a lot of them.
Yeah. But yeah, the One Ring to rule them all.
And I already did my second, which was dwarf. So Steve, it's up to you.
I am going to go with, I listed these as three because especially, early on, you see this like little triangle forming and how it plays out is very interesting. But, Han, Greedo, and Jabba.
Okay.
And how you see greed done in like three different ways. You know, this is like the, those chef cooking programs where they get one, ingredient and they have to do it a couple different ways. And this is like greed done three different ways. And you see Han take greed.
Yeah, and you just cheated. You took three and you end up taking one of mine.
You're welcome.
I call foul.
Too bad. There are no fouls in this game.
Three at one time.
Hold on. And hey, who knows? I could have taken all three of Ben's, so don't feel bad.
I'm going to list the entire cast of Star Wars for this one.
You know what? Star Wars didn't even make my list this time.
Wow. So anyway, Han takes greed to, you know, a certain extent, but then, you know, he realizes what the truth is. You know, what is all this going to do him in a galaxy ruled by the Empire, you know, and he comes to the realization that, okay, well, I have to do something about it. You see Greedo as just like a tool of greed. I mean, greed is in his name. It's pretty obvious. So you have this just a tool, and what, you know, what is his end? His end is just, you know, a lump on the seat over the, you know, hanging over the table. But then you have Jabba, which is like the real study in greed in Star Wars. And you just have this immense, perfect picture of what you would think of someone who is that greedy and that gluttonous and that just, you know, over the top, you know, everything that people shouldn't be. And, obviously he's not a person. Contrary to what Han says in the redone versions, ridiculous. Anyway, so, Jabba just seeing another end to greed, you know, you see his attachment to Leia, the chain that he attaches himself. And that is the tool of his death. You know, he is so greedy and he wants these things so much. And he sees this, you know, one thing, this one person is something that is so highly prized by other people that he wants it. And it turns out to be his demise.
So is that all three?
Han, Greedo, and Jabba, yeah. Yep. Did you doze off in the middle there?
No, I just lost count because...
Yeah, I know. I was trying to go, is there another character in Star Wars I haven't thought of?
I think you left out Lando.
Yeah, that one in there. Hmm.
No, he'd be under a different thing.
So, well, I've got my next one, which is I'm hoping to get in there before anybody else takes it, which I don't think anybody would think of this one. But I would go with Jane from Firefly.
You know, I did not have him on my list.
Yeah, I could see that, though. That's good.
Yeah, because he, I mean, even the very first time he meets Mao, you know, he's with some other, with some thugs. And basically how Mao turns him over, because Mao is at gunpoint, and there's three guys pointing a gun at him. And the way he turns the whole situation is by offering Jane a better deal. He appeals to his greed.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Jane, every decision comes with a price tag. And so even there's a debate, would Jane, you know, backstab and turn on Mao? And he gets this opportunity, and Mao asks why he didn't take it. And he goes, the money wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, what happens when the money is good enough? And then he goes, well, that'd be an interesting day.
So, yeah.
So I think Jane is, first of all, one of my favorite characters. I like Adam Baldwin a lot. So.
Yeah, he's a great character. It's interesting because he has redeeming values, but they're very, very deep.
Yeah. I like the relationship between him and Mao, and I would love to see that develop even further. That's part I really miss, of, you know, not having more
right
Firefly episodes.
Or seeing if that interesting day ever comes. Yeah. So, Steve, you got another?
I thought you were going to go next.
Oh, I was just asking you if you had another one. But I
think it's your turn.
Okay.
No, he doesn't have another one. He has another triad.
Yeah.
Well, I have a triad, but I'm not going to do it.
These seven are...
How about Scrooge McDuck?
Yes, that's a good one.
Scrooge McDuck. I mean, you can't beat the money bin. And it is kind of funny. I mean, he conquers his greed. In pretty much every other episode of DuckTales, he has to conquer it again. Oh, I'll give up my coin for my three nephews, you know. And,
I can't tell you how many times I dreamed about jumping in the lake of coins, not really realizing how painful that would actually be.
Oh, yeah, it would absolutely not work at all. But
but as a kid, forget about the money. You don't even really think about the money. It just looks fun.
Yeah, well, it's just about the visual, you know. You see him and he's diving in and he's swimming through these solid things. And if they really were that loose, it would be a lot of fun. Yeah. But like I said, he conquers his greed often. It happens a lot. It's just between episodes it comes back or something. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly what. But yeah, Scrooge McDuck, DuckTales, and then also the comics. There's just some good greed going on there.
And those are good because they do more than occasionally go into sci-fi and fantasy. So that's some really good stuff there.
Well, I think diving into a pool of money counts as fantasy because you can't.
Yeah, well, and my kids and I, we watch through, there's three DVD sets of DuckTales. And then there's the DuckTales movie that I got for free using Disney points. And we watched through every single episode and the movie. And the movie's interesting because it's basically the same plot as Aladdin, as the Aladdin Disney movie. Came out, I think, a year or two before Aladdin and basically has the same ending.
Wow.
It's interesting. So now it's not Robin Williams as a genie. It's a duck who looks like he's similar age to Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And... But anyway, I mean, Scrooge has to conquer his greed in the movie, and it's just a running theme, you know. Some people, you have a thorn in your side that's there to keep you humble or something.
la 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 la.
So, all right, go ahead, Steve.
Well, interesting. I was going to go with Scrooge.
Ah. Not Scrooge McDuck, but Scrooge. Very good.
But Ebenezer Scrooge. And obviously, just a really interesting study in greed, where he's just, he's stereotypically, I mean, obviously, I mean, people call each other Scrooge, you know. I mean, it's just right. one of those things. So you get this character, but redeemed at the end, you know. And nowadays, if someone calls you a Scrooge, it should be a compliment. You know, it's like, wow, you really, you know, gave up that life of greed, and now you're really into, you know, charitable good works. You're such a Scrooge. Oh, thank you. You know, but it's still, you know, it's still that word, that name is still inside the story, the body of the story. So you don't get the good sense of it that it, you know, that you probably should. But
yeah, but it is definitely a great example of charity.
At the end, yeah.
I mean, when he flips the side of the coin to the other side, and yeah. he turns over that new leaf and some other mixed metaphor that I could probably throw in there. when he does that, he becomes the opposite extreme,
right?
Which is good in metaphor. It's good to use extremes, yeah. Sometimes, unless it's Elysium, but we're not going to go there yet. That was episode 84. You guys missed it.
Oh, man.
Come on. From the previews, it looked like a bad movie. So anyway.
Listen to the episode, and you can hear a lively discussion about Elysium, which is also on my list here. So
are we at number five?
I don't know. I didn't number anything. I just had a list of things in my notes here.
All right.
So
I've done four or three. So.
No, go ahead.
You've done like 14.
Five if you count all three.
So I would say that my final one that I have, my fifth one, is Dominar Rigel from Farscape.
Definitely, yeah.
He's like the anti Yoda. I mean, wow, I just totally it's late. How did I forget Yoda? He's like the anti Yoda. He is all about wealth and accumulation, and but yet he's a very interesting character, because you have, you know, all these people who are kind of escaping the authorities, and here's this guy who is the emperor king of millions or billions of people, and he's all about wealth. He's all about hiding stuff and getting what's his.
Yeah, it is funny you bring up that he's the emperor of millions. But he's so concerned about just little tiny things.
Yeah.
Just hiding away this one little jewel or something, you know.
But it was so – he was one of my favorite characters on Farscape, because when I first started watching it, I didn't like the Muppet type stuff. I just wasn't used to it. But then as I started watching it, I really liked it. He was my he was probably my favorite character on that show.
He's another character like Quark, who goes through – change during the series, though, and he like Quark, he doesn't become completely 100%. He doesn't do the Scrooge thing. He's not a Scrooge, but yeah. You see subtle changes, and yeah.
And with serial television, you really can't have too many characters, you know, completely change. You can't have too many characters just make that change and have it stick, because most of the time, the shtick is that character is like that character, you know? So, you know, the Simpsons play that up all the time, where they say, you know, well, how come this can't just be wrapped up in 22 minutes and then everyone forgets about it in a week, you know? And because that's what happens in serial television. So, you know, it's difficult to have a story arc where the character actually comes out on the other side.
It's funny you bring up Simpsons, because Mr. Burns... Another great example of greed.
Yeah, but come on. Sci-fi fantasy. Simpsons? Really?
Yeah, really. It's got at least the fantasy side.
Have they ever done anything that's even slightly fantasy? Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
I have done sci-fi multiple times.
I know. I'm joking. It was a joke.
I know. I used to live across the street from Universal, so we used to ride that ride a lot, because it was the new thing on there.
Yeah, Simpsons ride?
Yeah, it was brand new when we were out there.
Interesting.
It took over for Back to the Future ride.
Oh, wow. I love the Back to the Future ride.
It's no longer. It is gone.
Yeah,
that's too bad.
It was a good one.
Let's
Although my
see.
Wife hated it because when we went on it, she sat in the corner, and every time it like shook or something, she was like smashing her head into the corner of this plastic car. So she did not enjoy it.
Oh, I did.
Well, I did too.
I loved it.
Couldn't
I was
get enough
living
of
the movie. Okay, so I was going to throw out video games. How many video games just become about collecting coins and getting as many coins as you can possibly get, or getting all the money you can possibly get from, you know, dead bodies that are left behind in your wake?
Yeah.
So that you can buy armor or whatever. But it's all about collecting the money. Get the money. Get the money. Get the money.
Yeah. Super Mario Brothers was all about getting those coins.
Yep.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's one that popped into my head when we were talking about greed. You guys have any others?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. I did have the Skeezix from Dark Crystal as well. Now, there's some note somewhere that Jim Henson intended each one of them to represent, I think, a deadly sin. But or at least a vice kind of thing. But they're all just kind of greedy. I want.
It's the Skeezix dilemma.
Yeah.
I was going to bring up Harry Mudd.
Yeah, good one.
Sort of a comical, fun, interesting type of a look at greed, where you have this character who's just, you know, over the top goofy, and he's not portrayed as, you know, evil or, you know, brooding in his tower or, you know, anything like that. You know, you just have this guy who has existed on greed for so long, that's pretty much all he knows.
I like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good one. How about Greedy Smurf?
Greedy Smurf.
No, I think he's the only Smurf who gets his own deadly sin, because there's not a lusty Smurf.
Let's hope not.
All right.
I don't think he
There is
qualifies.
Vanity Smurf.
I don't think he qualifies.
Why not?
I'm just totally messing with you. His name is Greedy.
I thought you were going to bring up some sort of insight into his character. That
No, none. So. Come on. Like, the Smurfs have, like, depths of character.
Well, there was Envy Smurf, but he was from Nevada. It was NV, so it was a little different.
Though there is Vanity Smurf.
Oh, wait. The fact that you came up with that on the spot, I don't know whether to be impressed or scared. Envy. Wow.
You like that?
I would go for something in between there.
I haven't decided, Steve, if I like that or not.
I'm scared. I'm scared. Scare pressed. That's what you are. Scare pressed.
Hey, wait. Look over there. Sorry. A bunny trail. I'm sorry. Yeah. What were you saying?
So let's get into the opposite then. We've already talked about some, but I had one big one. That gets into the opposite of greed, and that's It's a Wonderful Life, where it really is. I mean, the climax is about charity, and there's greed in the movie. There's greed that causes problems.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Potter could have been a top five all time greed guy. Even higher than Scrooge, because he's basically Scrooge with no redemptive ending.
Yeah, well, he gets no ending at all. It's just he's done. I think we talked about that before.
Except for the Saturday Night Live
sketch. Yeah.
Right.
but yeah, It's a Wonderful Life is definitely, you know, becomes about charity and about giving and about seeing the results of that. And you know, even the angel, he's giving to, I can't remember the name of the character, but to Jimmy Stewart. He's giving of himself to Jimmy Stewart to get his wings. He really wants his wings, so maybe he's actually doing this out of greed. but yeah, It's a Wonderful Life was the thing that I thought of with charity.
I think the desire for wings for an angel in this concept, which is flawed if you look at it theologically, but it's because with the wings, more glory can be heaped upon, you know, and God. So he's looking to get a better tool to do that with. And it's not like, hey, look, I have wings. Now I'm the cool angel. It's not like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say one that I have as far as charity, from a slightly different perspective, would be Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Because he basically gives everything to watch over Luke.
Definitely, yeah.
He gives everything to become one of the greatest Jedi warriors to being the old kooky guy that lives in the hills.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we talked a little bit last episode with you guys where we were talking about casting and about how Ian McGregor was wanting to get his own movie. And I was thinking about that. I'm sure they could come up with an exciting story, but if you look at it just in broad strokes, what a boring movie. You know, it'd just be him sitting in a cave on Tatooine making sure Luke's okay.
No, I imagine the pitch session. It'd go something like this. All right. Imagine Castaway in the Star Wars universe.
No, but what they really could do is redeem.
Wait. Instead of a volleyball, he has a
lightsaber.
He has a boulder.
But no, what they could do is redeem this waste of 20 years that Obi-Wan did, you know, sitting in a desert, in a cave, basically, and tell you exactly what he was doing to protect Luke. You know, what was he doing? I mean, did he have some sort of...
You mean if there was, like, somebody finally did get word and tried to attack Luke and he protected him without him knowing it?
Yeah, things like that, you know?
I mean, if someone just looked up in the fake yellow pages and said, oh, hey, Skywalker, wait a minute. That used to be my name. I think that he might be related to me.
I killed someone named Skywalker.
No.
It was my wife.
I'm sorry. I think I like my Boulder Wilson concept much better.
I can see him taking his lightsaber and digging out the mouth of that boulder and sticking it in and, you know, hollowing out the eyes and using the force to make it walk along with him.
Yeah. No. Using the force to on Wilson going, you will be silent.
Nice.
He just has a blaster and it's, I've created fire. Yeah. I did it yesterday too, but it's,
we should do a sketch about that.
Obi-Wan, the desert years. Yeah. I mean, we're talking a multi-season arc of a TV show here.
Yeah, that would be epic.
Budget would be low.
Wait,
one actor and
lots of sand.
Lots of sand.
Yeah,
and it's easy to make a boulder float and make it look like it's a real boulder. Yeah.
And a rock. I got a rock.
I got a rock. A really big rock with a face. All right. I think we need to move on.
I'm sorry I even mentioned it.
No, it's pretty good. Mine is if you can count talking trees as fantasy, then I would have to say The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein.
Oh, what a terrible, terrible book.
but I mean, how amazing that this tree would give and give and give.
Yes, and you know what? It's a great example of greed as well. Because how amazing that kid is just taking and taking and taking.
Yeah,
it's about parenthood. You give and give and give until you're just a stump. You have nothing left, and then what are you going to do? You just let the kid sit on you.
Yeah, sit on you. Great. With what? His bum. That's great. You just, what are you,
I give you my branches, my fruit, my leaves, and what do you give me? Your bottom. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's what... Oh,
wow. There's some healing that needs to happen, or maybe some therapy.
Oh, we're in the middle of potty training our two-year-old.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I was gagging today, and my son's like, what's wrong, Daddy? Sometimes poop is gross, son. It makes a mess. So you need to tell me when it's coming so you don't just do it in your underwear, okay? And then take off your underwear in the middle of the kitchen and run around with stuff on your foot. Golly.
Oh, Jace, you have so much to look forward to in a couple of years.
Okay, so are we done with charity? I'm sorry, I cut you off, Steve, with your book.
What book? Oh, The Giving Tree. I mean, go read it. It's short.
I love the book. I think it's an awesome book.
It is, if you look at it in the spirit intended.
Yeah.
It's very easy.
I think that that there is truth to what you're saying. There is a sadness and a loss, which is often associated with charity. You know, I think that it's not just this happy-go-lucky story. I think what you pointed out, there's true. There's this giving, 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 and on the other side, there's take, take, take. And there was, you know, there are some consequences to that.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to some of the scriptural teachings about greed?
I had a couple other charities. I had Robin Hood, the version I chose is Prince of Thieves.
How about the version from Time Bandits?
No.
Okay. I'm not going to go there. We've already gone off on too many rabbit trails. Sorry.
And then I had Sam from Lord of the Rings and Dr. Simon from Firefly for the same reasons that they pretty much gave up and would give anything for Sam for Frodo and Simon for his sister. So.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned I was watching those movies with my son. He's read through the books and it's cool to talk about Sam with my son and just, you know, Sam is a hero. He's the sacrificial hero. And I love Sam. Every time I read the book and every time I watch the movie, I love him more.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorites.
And Simon too. He's a good character. I like him. But I don't love him the way Sam I want to be friends with.
Sam,
you know.
Everyone wishes they had a Sam.
Yeah, it is an interesting hero because, yeah, everyone wishes they had a Sam, but I don't hear people necessarily saying, I wish I was Sam.
It's true.
But he is a good example of a science fiction fantasy character to aspire to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe even better than Superman. You know, we talk about Superman as the aspirational type of character where you aspire to be like him because he's good and noble and strong and true. But Sam, he's good and noble and not strong, but he's true. You know, he will do everything within his power, which isn't much, but everything. I love his moments in the books. They're some of the most heartfelt.
And his monologue in the second film is my favorite moment in the entire trilogy.
Which one?
The whole portion from when he goes, why do we keep doing this? There's good in the world. You know, that whole long monologue when he's doing the talk over, as you see all the results from the fights of all the main characters. And then it transitions in of, you know, the heroes. And then Frodo goes, well, you're a hero too.
Yeah.
That whole portion.
Where he's talking about story and heroes and
being
remembered and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my favorite part of the whole trilogy.
Yeah. And it perfectly cast, too. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
Yeah, he really sells Sam.
I don't know if this is true or not, but I thought I read somewhere where he was a Christian or became a Christian recently. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I do remember reading something about Sean Astin in regards to that.
I don't know. I mean, he was Rudy.
Yeah, he was awesome. Rudy and then the Goonies. I mean, he's done some really awesome films.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so now we're ready to move on to scriptural teachings and the Book of Lewis.
The Book of Lewis. I have some scriptural teachings.
All right.
First is Luke 12:15. Where Jesus says to his disciples, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. All kinds of greed.
Yes. Good.
Yeah. And then in Ephesians 5:3, it says, but among you, there must not be even a hint of sexual morality or any kind of impurity or of greed, because these are improper for God's holy people. So among you, there must not be even a hint of greed, because it is improper for God's holy people.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, this is definitely one of the deadly sins that really can mess up relationships.
Yeah.
And although maybe we're getting more into envy with some of that there. as far as relationships with other people. But the two that came to mind for me was in 1 Timothy, where the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil.
Right.
It's through this that some have wandered away from the faith and that. But the other one that came to mind for me is not so much this isn't a verse saying don't be greedy, but it's a verse giving you a reason not to be greedy. And that's in Psalm 23, where it's the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want.
Yeah.
I have no need of want because he takes care of me. He leads me by still waters and he prepares for me the meal that I need. And he prepares it for me in the presence of my enemy and protects me. And it's not so, I think that's more of a verse illustrating why, you know, greed is bad. But here's a reason why you don't need greed, because you have someone who's going to take care of you and take care of your needs.
Yeah.
And that goes into my verse, which is Matthew 6:33, which is basically, I think if I had a life verse, it would be this verse. And it's, but seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Yeah. And the context of that is then saying, don't worry about tomorrow. Don't worry about what you're going to wear and all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Focus on the main things, and all these other things will be taken care of.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I like how they kind of just flowed into each other. But the only thing I can get from the Book of Lewis, though. I mean, he says a lot of things about selfishness and that kind of thing. And one of the things that I found was in The Problem of Pain, he says, at this very moment, you and I are either committing this, about to commit it, or repenting of it, talking about selfishness. But this, maybe I should have brought this up as an example, but it's from the Book of Lewis. So we're going to use it here at the end, from The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, Eustace Scrubb. And that's where it says, sleeping on a dragon's hoard, with a greedy dragonish thoughts in his heart, he had become a dragon himself.
Yeah.
And there, another example of greed, the dragon, who just wants the gold. And what does a dragon do with gold? I guess I've read some explanations where they talk about the dragon wants to sleep on it because it's comfortable to them or something like that. But what I did always wonder as a kid, what's the dragon going to do with the gold? Is he going to take it and spend it on something? You know, he's going to like, oh, I've got all this gold. Now I can go downtown and buy the thing that I've always wanted. Yeah. You know, those really nice dragon shoes.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But, you know, the dragon is, I think, another great example, like Midas, of greed that just kind of says, you know, look at what this greedy thing looks like. It's a dragon who has all this stuff that it can't use because it has no real value in the dragon's life. And with charity, you're showing, I think that's a good thing. A good concept is with charity, you're showing value, the value of other people. And with greed, it's about the value of the things. So
I sort of get a different sense of dragons and gold, though. I sort of get a sense that they want it in spite. You know, they want it because it means so much to the humans. It means so much to, you know, the dwarves, you know, all these different people. And it's sort of like a spit in their face. You know, I have your gold. I can't do anything with it, but I have it.
Well, Steve, hold that thought for next time when we talk about envy.
Dun, dun, dun.
So any last words about greed, gentlemen?
Yeah, I want more.
More greed?
No.
There's an interesting snake eating its own tail. I want more greed.
We want
Give
more.
Me
we
more want greed.
More. And greed, for all intents and purposes, is not good.
And I would say from my experience with church consulting and working at a Christian university and so on and so forth, I would say that charity is one of the dying virtues. I think people give less now than has ever been in my lifetime.
Yeah, I do. I've heard people say that is partially because of the economy. Like there's an inverse correlation between when the economy's down, giving goes down. One thing I am proud of, though, is that in studies and polls and stuff, it is Christians who are giving the most.
Oh, well, that's always the case. But even Christians, the average Christian gives 2.8% of their overall income to others, charities and churches combined. 2.8%.
Wow.
Well, and that is a percentage that is being made, if it's on average, is being made up for by people who actually are, you know, there's people giving zero, which means I mean, there are people who are giving 10%, 12%, 15%.
Right, but it just shows you how many. It's 2.8%, it just shows you how many people are giving far less.
I am when you bring this up, and I'm reminded of the scene at the end of Schindler's List, where, spoiler alert, Schindler.
It's only been out for 20 years, Ben.
Schindler wants he breaks down at the end because I could have done more.
Yeah,
I could have done more.
I could have saved more of them.
Yeah. I wonder how many of us really. I mean, these things in the Bible where it's talking about you come before the throne and. You know, I knew you because you did these things for the poor. You did these things for the hungry, the thirsty, those in prison. And I wonder how many people who even in that side of things are saying, well, I could have done more, though, looking back and saying,
And hopefully people will actually come to that realization. But a lot of times they don't. You know, in our culture, it's all about achieving your dream. And there's far more in Scripture about doing God's will and helping others than pursuing your dream. I mean, that's very...
is there anything in the Scriptures about...
Yeah, I know.
Pursue your dream. Yeah. Follow your bliss.
No, but that's what you hear even in a lot of churches. God has given you, you know, and obviously there are God-given dreams. Of course there are. But many times what we are pursuing are not God-given dreams or we have a... unhealthy balance, because think about it, you know, if the churches are only able to do as much as the resources that they have, so imagine how many more people could be helped. Imagine how many more things could actually be done if people were giving.
Yeah. I have said, even I remember saying in high school, or feeling like in high school, that if churches were if Christians were giving as much as they actually could give, we wouldn't have as many problems with poverty. And even healthcare, you know, where we wouldn't be worried about so much about that, because churches would be able to step up and do what they're supposed to do.
Exactly. That's what happened 200 years ago. You know, churches took care of people. They took care of communities. And all of a sudden you have the government stepping in and doing stuff that the church is typically supposed to do or has done for years, and it just makes a mess of it.
Yeah. And it's not just giving of money, but a giving of time and giving of resources, you know, in other ways as well.
I mean, if you look at churches were the ones who started orphanages and hospitals, and now, you know, across the country, people are giving less. And the problem is, because of course there's a handful of people who are abusing and manipulating people. But the problem is that's a handful of people who, you know, it becomes almost an excuse for people to go, well, you know, there's all these people who are – the truth is most of the pastors, most of the churches actually are responsible in helping other people. The truth – it's just a matter of – this is the bottom line from a spiritual perspective. To be a fully developed Christian, follower of Christ, you have to give. You can't be a mature Christian and not give. Now, believe me, I'm the first one. I understand what it's like to go through tough times. I've been there. So there's complete grace for people who are struggling and you know who have low finances. I feel very uncomfortable with pastors who try to manipulate and try. But there is a biblical principle that you can't really be a fully developed follower of Christ if you're in fear of finances, or some people, I guess, aren't afraid. Some people just, it's not a priority.
Yeah. And it's not just, I mean, people who can't give money you can, I mean, you still can give of time. And, you know, we go to a great church. We have, I can't remember the percentage of volunteers in our church, but it's a higher percentage than normal. Although I don't know about the financial end of things. I couldn't tell you like what percentage of
sure.
people give, and I can't tell you what percentage of income people in our church give. I know that there's polls, Barna polls and that kind of thing that are, you know, for the nation, but I couldn't tell you for our okay. church. But
well, and there's different seasons of life too, mm-hmm. where you're able to give more of one thing than the other. But, you know, even when Eric and I were struggling with, I mean, barely getting by, we'd always try to give something financially, even though it wasn't much, because we knew, you know, that, you know, where does our faith come in? Not that, you know, you give to receive, but we were trying to, you know, show God, you know, we are still trying to honor you. It's not much, but like the poor lady, you know, Jesus noticed the lady who gave her last little bit. It's not much, but it's the sacrifice that God sees.
Yeah, and one problem I have with the health and wealth type of teaching is that that is not so much appealing to the charity side. It's appealing right. to the greed side. If no, you give, you will get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a serious problem there.
And that's the opposite lesson of the point of giving. The point of giving is that you're trying to help others. Now, you do reap what you sow. You're planting seeds when God can see that you're faithful with few, can make you ruler over many. But that doesn't mean that you're going to be a millionaire and you're just giving to God to get, because that's not the point. If you're giving to get, then it is appealing, and you'd have a lot more millionaires, because people who are, you know, if God was just a bank, you know, all you just do is keep giving and you just, you know, be racking up your interest.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a web comic called it's Adam4D.com.
Adam, and, like the name, or Atom?
ADAM.
Okay.
The number four, the letter D, .com. It's a curiously Christian web comic. It says there's a one a little while ago. It was a household budget, and basically it was a pie graph, and it has fill in the blanks, and it has all different colors, and the biggest slice is the blue slice. And it says, you know, housing, other bills, automobiles, spending money. And basically you fill in where, you know, where your budget goes. And then it that's the first panel. Then it goes down to the second one, and the blue slice jumps out. He says, "Heidi ho, I'm Mr. Blue Slice. And according to that pie chart, I am the most important thing to you. Have you ever thought of me that way? No? You're so silly. Ha ha. Can I share one of my favorite quotes with you? Pretty please? It goes like this. Give me 5 minutes with a person's checkbook, and I'll tell you where their heart is. That's Billy Graham. And if it burns, that's okay. Just remember Mr. Blue Slice and rub some financial priority on it. It'll be better before you know it." And then he winks and gives a thumbs up. This Mr. Blue Slice. So it's just, I mean, it's a wonderful illustration of, you know, what's the most important thing in your life. It's that blue slice. It's that big, huge quarter or whatever of your budget.
Yeah.
And what's that? What is it?
Well, and I think that is I always say at our church, usually you can tell where your heart really is, where you put your time and your money.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the truth is, someone who doesn't have much and gives a little bit is a much bigger sacrifice than you have people who make a lot more money and they might give 0.5% of their income and think that it's big because they compare it to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you know, it's one of those things. We all have finances and we're all, you know, I have grace for the person struggling financially because I've been there. So
yeah,
it's not a fun place to be.
Yeah.
No.
So let's try and end this on a fun place. well, no, it's a good conversation. And it actually, you guys haven't heard the episode yet because I just posted it this afternoon probably. But we talked about a little bit in Elysium about what's our obligation to help people who need help and that kind of thing. So this is a nice kind of 1-2 punch here, I guess.
Cool.
But yeah, I think that that was last words. I was asking for any final thoughts about things. And I think that was yours, Dr. Jace, a final thought that started 10 minutes ago. But any other final thoughts before we close things out here?
I think we're good.
Okay. All right. Well, join us next time when we'll be trying to wrap up our summer movie series. And we've got some other just fun things planned to do. So that said, thanks for listening. And if you guys would like to say goodbye.
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 And Godspeed. You've been listening to the Strangers and Aliens podcast, hosted by Ben Avery, Steve MacDonald, and Dr. Jace O'Neill. Our music was composed and mixed by Tim Leffel. Please join in the conversation by visiting our website, strangersandaliens.com, where you'll find show notes, articles, reviews, and more. You can also email us directly at podcast@strangersandaliens.com, or like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangers. Or you can leave us a voicemail on the Strangers and Aliens hotline. Just call 1-804-37-ALIEN and leave your message. And once again, thanks for listening. Who wants to do the welcome? Steve, you have not done the welcome in a while.
No.
Just say, welcome to Strangers and Aliens. I'm Steve MacDonald, and I'm here with... Or however you want to do the introduction. I know you feel like you need a script, so...
And isn't it stupid? We've only done 85 of these shows. You think I could get it down yet? No. I always feel like there's a spotlight on me. It's like as soon as welcome to this strange the alien.
I'm still recording, by the way. This is going to end up on the post credits bloopers, probably.
I don't mind. Isn't that sad?
Sing along with me. The greatest adventure
is all yours.
Okay.